Good day and welcome to this next edition of Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. I am your host, Rondell Donohue, attorney at law, and once again, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to bring the law and you. Today, we have a very noble topic, a topic that has been constantly on the minds and mouths of many persons in our country, speaking about procurement law, understanding the concepts of what is the Public Procurement and Disposal of Property Act, and of course, seeing that Parliament has just recently passed the regulation that will now see the Office of the Procurement Regulator moving forward in terms of all things relating to procurement contracts and everything else. And today I have a very special guest in studio, and I'm very honored to have him here. And this is Mr. Munilal Lal Chan, and he is the chairman of the procurement, and the procurement regulator of the Procurement Board of Trinidad and Tobago. Now, in the past, he has served as a board of governors and was also chairman of the audit committee of the National Energy Skills Center, as well as chairman of the board of directors of Invest TT Limited and the Education Facilities Company Limited. Now, he's no stranger to directorship in a number of prestigious firms. Now, Mr. Munilal is a former director and vice president finance and planning at the Atlantic LNG, and he's a former director of several RBC financial institutions. Now, he's a chartered accountant, as well as he has MBAs. He has loads of accolades, actually, and despite his vast professional repertoire, Munilal is a committed family man who occasionally enjoys music, golf, football, and cricket. And he also indicated that his daughter must see that he actually looks well on TV, so I'm sure she will be proud. Good morning, Mr. Lal Chan.
A very good morning, Rondell, to you and your viewing audience in WESN. And again, it's a privilege to be back here in studio with you to discuss the act and the requirements and so on.
Thank you so much for coming on our program, because we know that, you know, we have to impart the knowledge, particularly now that the procurement act is coming into force. But let's start with you. What is the function of your role as the chairman of the Office of Procurement Regulation?
Well, as chairman, I'm also a full-time position. So it's to chair the affairs of the board, but also to chair the day-to-day activities in terms of the operation administration of the office itself. And that's in the role of procurement regulator. And that in itself has a wide facet to it, because it deals with the whole issue of ensuring all the policies, procedures, databases, reporting requirements, and everything associated with the running and efficient running of the office to be done in a very transparent way.
So therefore, you are the chairman as well as the procurement regulator.
As well as the procurement regulator. So I'm responsible for the day-to-day operations and also to ensure that policies and procedures and so on are adequately approved at the board level, and also to keep the board involved in the entire process of running the office.
Now, in terms of your selection as the procurement regulator on the board, are you selected by the state or parliament?
Well, neither. I, like all my board members, had to go through a very rigorous process of interview. In fact, I was personally interviewed by His Excellency the President and two other officers of the Office of the President, and gone through the whole process of being interviewed for 2 hours. And
wow.
Then all the members of the board similarly had to go through that process. And we represent different areas. For example, the procurement regulator has to have a certain level of qualification and experience, which includes 10 years of actual procurement experience, must have either finance or related background and so on. And so to all the members of the board. So I was appointed by His Excellency in consultation.
And that will have been
in 2018. In consultation with the Office of the Prime Minister and also the Leader of the Opposition.
All right, so therefore, all arms of state has to be involved.
They had to sign off on it.
Indeed. Well, I'm sure you are the best man for the job, because you're still here.
I see, yeah.
Now, in terms of, let's get to the procurement legislation. An overview of the procurement process. How did the legislation the bill became law, and why is the need for procurement regulations in Trinidad and Tobago?
It went through a number of processes, but it goes back to 1962 when we had the initial Central Tenders Board Act. And then coming out of that, you would have had a number of pieces of amendments to the CTB. And in addition to that, you would have like what you refer to as the State Enterprise Monitoring Manual that guides some of the public sector entities. But also within the Central Tenders Board Act, there were certain exemptions, for example, to allow NIPDEC and a similar type organization to carry on procurement activities. And then you have a number of Commission of Inquiries, the Off Commission of Inquiries, and so on, that led to a white paper. And then the white paper led to the bill led to the act being passed, and so on. So it went through a number of processes with civil society groups and so on. So coming out of that, we have the act. Now, why, some of the question is, why do we really need changes?
Yes.
Why do you need an act? Now, there were some things that were pointed out in the Off Commission in terms of some of the types of practices that were taking place that was not in the best interest of the country.
And when we say the Off Commission, this was
Off Commission of Inquiry.
Inquiry, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at, even today, last 2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister mentioned the whole issue of corruption in the public sector. Again,
yes.
Even though we have these different legislations in place. So we do have some issues that we have to deal with. The OECD did a study in 2014 that mentioned that if you do public procurement in the proper way, the lack of transparency and so on leads to a leakage of about 20 to 30% leakage. Actually, it's 10 to 30% leakage. And that could lead to a significant leakage. We did a back of the envelope calculation, and you could look at a leakage of about $5.2 billion TT a year. The same thing was done by the European Commission, and they suggested that you do lose about 120 billion euros every year in Europe,
wow,
where people think everything is okay, no corruption, and so on. And they suggested that around the same figure, between 20 and 30% leakages, and 48% of the leakages is as a result of poor management. So the act really deals with the whole issue of the management of public procurement, but it goes past public procurement, and it deals with retention and disposal of public property. So that's a background in terms of what really led to this legislation. So it now pulls together all the different pieces of legislation. But more importantly, some of the things that are required under the act now is that previously all the public bodies used to have their own list of pre-qualified contractors. And it was a nightmare to get pre-qualified. Some of the horror stories you would hear is that you have to pass something underneath the table to get on the list. And when you get on the list, you're not invited, and so on. So now there will be one database that is held by the Office of Procurement Regulation. And every person who wants to deal with public bodies have to come and get registered on that database.
And just stick up in there. Now, when we say public bodies, we mean ministries, but we mean state enterprises as well, and all
non-governmental.
I'll give you a list,
and you'll see how far-reaching it is, really.
Yes.
A lot of people don't understand the Office of the President. The Parliament, even though we report to the Parliament, falls under the Act. The judiciary, including Chief Justice, Magistrate, Court of Appeal, and so on, falls under the Act. A ministry or department or the division of a ministry, all ministries, departments, and so on. The Tobago House of Assembly or divisions of the Tobago House of Assembly. Municipal corporation. The public health, regional health authority. Statutory bodies, Police Service Complaints Authority. All these agencies, the regiment, police, all they are subject to investigation and so on. State-controlled enterprises, Heritage Petroleum, Caribbean Airlines, the FCB, National Flour Mills, Plipdeco, all those big organizations, NGC. Service commissions, the Police Service Commissions,
yes,
they fall under the Act. But not only that, it went on to state a body corporate or unincorporated entity using public money. All these sporting organizations that gets funding from the Sports Company of Trinidad and Tobago, school boards of education that get funding from the Ministry
boards
of
that
Education.
Are act of Parliament. Let's
That's
say, for
right.
instance, we have NCC or even, like, say, TUCO.
NCC, TUCO, they yeah, all... In fact, on January 19th, about 2 years ago, we met with NCC,
yes,
with Winston Gypsy Peters and all his members. And we told them that these are the different practices that should be done. So, yes, they fall under the Act. Now, once you spend in public money, so you could imagine now that it's wider than just the public bodies, but those who are in receipt of public funds, they are also required to make sure that what they do with that public money is required under the Act, transparency, accountability, integrity, value for money, and so on.
So therefore, this will fall a lot in terms of like community development, etc., who gets a lot of grants.
Absolutely.
Culture.
All that money that falls under these different NGOs. is subject now to the act. So it's very wide ranging. So you realize really none shall escape.
Yes, and do you have the manpower though? Deal with all these bodies, particularly when it comes to tendering and all these various arms of procurement?
Well, what we have done is to establish the framework. So we would have so far issued over 42 handbooks and guidelines that guides the process. We have had over 270 public sessions with various institutions. I'll just give you an example. We met with the Presbyterian Board of Education, over 150 of their teachers, principals, and so on. We met with NGC, WASA. We just recently finished a session with the Tobago House of Assembly and all the secretaries and the chief secretary. We met with TNTech, over 300 of their employees involved in the procurement activities and so on. So it is gaining momentum. We are also setting up what we call a learning management system. It's an online system whereby any practitioner in the public domain involved in public procurement and disposal of public property could come in and be self-trained. All the sessions that we have had, we actually video record it.
Okay.
So if you want to find out how to do evaluation, how to do anything in terms of public procurement, you could come in, sit at your own time, look at the videos, and be fully trained in terms of that. Additionally, we are working with the Accreditation Council and the institutes that are involved in further education to set up the curriculum. We have already set up the requirements for the different levels of procurement practitioners, and we have also published that. So it's a whole body of work coming together, because what we found out is that there is a big capacity gap between what is expected of the public bodies. Yeah. A number of the public bodies used to depend on Central Tenders Board to do their tenders.
Well, even they have their own tendering system, like
State Some of them still have their own tendering system, but the ones that depended on the Central Tenders Board. Now, with this act, the Central Tenders Board goes away, and therefore they have to be self-sufficient. They have to appoint the relevant persons with the requisite knowledge, skills, and experience to do the procurement. Otherwise, failure to do that could lead to probably as timing of the procurement activities.
Right. So now, I mean, you mentioned that there are a lot of bodies, but what about services that are covered under the Act? Now, are there any exempted services that does not apply under the Act?
Yeah, well, there were some exempted services that came through in the amendment to the Act in 2020, December. And those has to do with legal services, financial and auditing services, financing as it relates to debt servicing arrangements and medical services. However, it's not a free-for-all.
Because I was now going to ask, what sort of checks and balances are there, particularly with legal services, all these other services?
So the Minister of Finance still has to present to the office the guidelines associated with under what circumstances you can procure these and what are the rules of engagement. Once that is sent to the office, we then send it to Parliament, and then it becomes a public document. So it's not like you just go about and procure these without any guidelines and so on. There will be specific guidelines. And if you fall outside of those, it will be still subject to the audit of the office.
And what about in the construction sector?
Construction goods, works, and services. Works falls under construction sectors, and they all fall under the Act. There was some amendment to Section 7.2 that deals with where there is a conflict between the government-to-government agreement and the Public Procurement and Disposal of Public Property Act. The government-to-government relationship will supersede the Act. However, there is a reporting requirement. Even so, you have to demonstrate that there was a conflict. And in addition to that, you have to also send a report to the office within a certain time frame that you would have complied with Section 29 of the Act in those government-to-government relationships. So it's not as if it doesn't fall under the Act. You still have to report under Section 29 that you were in compliance. And if you were not in compliance, we'll be subject to audit.
Right. And let's move. I know we are in the COVID-19 pandemic constantly, and there's a lot of procurement in terms of the health sector. Now, as the current arrangement is, the procurement is done by NIPDEC, any health.
Some
sector.
Of it is some done by NIBDEC, some is done directly by the Ministry of Health, some are done by, directly by the regional health authorities.
Now, in terms of the engagement of suppliers there, now, how did COVID-19 affect that sort of procurement, let's say tendering process? Because usually you do a three-code system, etc. And I would have seen even in Parliament where the Minister would have stated that emergency suppliers would have had to be, supply would have had to be directly engaged. How is that going to now affect the new procurement laws when it's fully proclaimed in terms of the health sector?
It's not going to be fundamentally different, and I'll tell you why. Emergency is emergency, and emergencies are catered for under the Act. But those emergencies is not make-believe emergencies. So under the Act, you would have probably procured things like vaccine and so on under the emergency requirements. And there are provisions in the Act to deal with emergency purchases. So we do not expect in the cases of emergency, for example, I'll give you another, not only in the medical sector, but in the construction sector, when we had the partial washaway of the road in Manzalena, that would have fallen under the emergency purchases. Now, what we are suggesting is not every emergency is emergency. And I'll give you an example. Flooding is not an emergency.
Right.
We expect flooding every year. Now, what we expect is the regional corporations to have framework agreements in place, like the health sector, so that when you have emergencies, you will already know who you could call out, which hardware you can go to, at what price, what will be the cost of a backhoe, what will be the cost of the backhoe driver under emergency situations, after work, during normal working hours, and so on. So those things have to be put in place now under the new Act. So that you have these call-out procedures for emergency purchases, inverted commas, so you know what your exposure is, and it's not that you're rushing to get these things done when the emergency occur.
Right. So obviously,
all those are catered for under the new regime.
Now, another area is donations. How are donations regulated? Let's say, for instance, if a pharmaceutical company. If they want to give a donation to the regional health authority in terms of equipment, etc., does the Act apply to donations as well as it is? I mean, I know currently people do it. Well, what about how it will fall in the regulations?
In kind, there is a question mark in terms of kind. In terms of donation and so on, that's fine. But when you are getting donations, the Act also protects in terms of, so you get a donation from X. That does not mean to say that you are obligated now when you're going to give a contract, you give it automatically to X because they were kind to you during a certain situation. So you still need to follow due process in terms of procurement activities if you're going to invite that company that gave you that donation. So they don't get any preferential treatment. If it is that they give donation in monetary terms, then that becomes public funds because it's funds that are received or receivable by a public body, even though it's a donation. So therefore, if you receive or receivable, then you have to follow the due process under the Procurement Act to acquire goods, works, and services.
Right. So, Mr. Lal Chan, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. You are watching Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital with Mr. Munilal Lal Chan, Chairman and Regulator of Public Procurement. We'll be right back.
Yeah, when I go to church, it is called.
And welcome back to Strictly Legal with Rhonda Donowa, yours truly, and Mr. Munilal Lal Chan. I know I had a little rapping session here with my tongue twister, but I got it correct. I maybe saw a premonition on Mr. Munilal, maybe a minister. But he said that they call him Minister Lal Chan in church. So I was almost correct.
Correct, Rhonda.
Right, so we were speaking about, of course, engagement practices. I know we're speaking about innovation, but the procurement regulation, I know sometimes you find that suppliers normally have meetings with the ministers and line ministers and all these various things in terms of selling their items. How does those rule of engagement affect the new legislation, basically?
Well, you could have what we call and refer to unsolicited proposals. And we have written a guideline in terms of how you deal with unsolicited proposals. So that is clearly stated in the guidelines in terms of the international best practices to how you deal with it. Because sometimes you do get some good ideas, and then how you protect those ideas by not falling into the wrong hands, and then you go out and you get it for competitive bids and so on. So the guidelines was set up based on international best practice.
And these guidelines are published?
It is published on our website,
okay.
PRTT.org.
Okay, and also with respect to public-private partnership, how does that work in terms of...
Public-private partnership, the Act governs public-private partnership. Section 7 of the Act deals with public-private partnership. What we have not done yet is that we have not written the guidelines on public-private partnership arrangement because we are waiting for the policy document that is to be developed by government as it relates to public-private partnership arrangements. Because that is not done. The closest thing we have was the 2012 draft PPP that was done by the previous government, but yep. We haven't seen anything since then. So that's something that we are looking forward to. In fact, we have already had sessions with the IADB consultants and their specialists in terms of PPP. So we would have had those discussions in preparation for PPP arrangement, but the Act does cover PPP.
It does. And let's deal with, I know recently in Parliament, in the Senate, I know House of Representatives sometime in January, but in the Senate, they would have approved the public procurement and disposal of property regulations. Now let's talk a bit about those regulations and how does that affect the operations of the office?
Well, there are 10 sets of regulations that were passed both in the lower house and the upper house. And those regulations are really precursor to the full proclamation of the Act. The regulations actually really gives additional information in terms of practices coming out of the main body of the Act. And I'll give you for an example. For example, the whole issue of when somebody feels aggrieved, they can come to the office and ask and challenge the process under which contracts were awarded and so on. Those challenge proceedings, all it had in the Act was there will be a challenge proceeding and give them some basic information. So what the regulation does is it fleshes out some of the practices. And even further to the regulations, we will have further practice in terms of how the office deals with it on a day-to-day basis, in terms of what is expected of each participant in the hearing proceedings.
Yeah.
So that's an idea of what comes out. The other area is in terms of the type of procurement activities and details around that, for example, open bidding, selective bidding, sole source, single source, all those are now given additional teeth in the regulations. Another area is previously a number of the public bodies used to have what you call board tenders committee or subcommittee of the board that deals with tenders committee. Boards are no longer involved in the day-to-day operations of procurement. So they can't tell you, well, invite this person or invite that person. That all has to be done in a very transparent manner. The person responsible for that is a named procurement officer under Section 62(1) of the Act. And therefore, boards do not get involved in procurement. They get involved in approval from a financial delegated authority.
But doesn't that cause a lot of bureaucracy in the system when you try to get away from bureaucracy in terms of having one central body deal with tendering across the entire state enterprise?
It makes life easier for the public body. So each public body now will have a PDAC, Procurement and Disposal Advisory Committee. So you go through your entire process.
And how are they selected, though?
They are selected by the regulations. It has to be the head of finance, the head of legal or corporate secretary, and a subject matter expert. That is clearly stated in the Act. So it's not any and anybody could sit on that PDAC. And the reason why we say head of legal, head of finance, and they are the ones who make the recommendation to the CEO or the permanent secretary, so that you have the real persons who are aware of the financial accountability and also the legal requirements. And one of those two persons will be the chairperson.
So therefore, it will no longer be members of the board making decisions, but it will be more administrative or executive.
The day-to-day operational aspect. That's right. So PDAC and what the role of the PDAC is also enshrined in the regulations. So those are just two of the requirements. And there are a number of different things in terms of how you dispose of personal property that is also under the regulations. So the 10 sets of regulations is 10 different areas. One of the first ones that you would have heard debated is the requirement to keep copious records, either in electronic form or hard copies. Failure to provide records during an investigation or to conceal the information could result in a fine of $5 million and 10 years in prison. So there are serious consequences, and the regulation fleshes out how you go about keeping those records and so on.
And what about corruption in terms of persons who are dealing with allegations and practices?
If you have any allegation of corruption, of fraudulent practices and associated with the procurement or disposal of public property, you don't have to even come to the office, but we do have a whistleblowing facility that you can come through anonymously, provide the information. This is a whistleblowing facility that is held outside of Trinidad. So there is a toll-free number you call, or you can get on that. And it's actually held out of Canada. It's a renowned organization. There is a partition, so they send the information to us. If you want to be known who it is, then you send the information. Then we trigger an investigation. The investigation is completed. We find culpability. It goes to the director of public prosecution. For example, Bedriggan carries a fine of $5 million and 10 years imprisonment. Not or.
This is why they are now pushing forth the whistleblower legislation as well.
That will help. But even in the absence of that, we have already put that in place. And after proclamation, you will see a number of advertisements as to how people can get on the system and make the necessary requests for investigation. If you, as a broadcaster, bring certain things on the television in terms of allegation, we can also investigate allegation of corruption.
And in terms of the proclamation, I note that the Minister of Finance said on Twitter yesterday that by the end of March, is that the timeline we're looking
at? That's the timeline we're working with. And the Minister, I think he is a little bit firm now. He says this has to happen and everybody has to get ready to take advantage of it. And you would have mentioned the bureaucracy. Remember now, the procurement and disposal activity is done within the public body under guidelines. So there is less bureaucracy. It's how they now utilize their internal resources. I'll give you a for example. Anytime you drive in front of the police barracks, you should see a whole host of dilapidated vehicles. Recently in the Arima Borough Corporation, you saw all these old vehicles and so on. That could be done now by Arima Borough Corporation. It could be done by the police service without going through the Central Tenders Board, the Board of Survey, taking 2 and 3 years and so on. They can do that internally. We have the guidelines to guide them in terms of best practice. And that could be done so you can just imagine you have all these derelict vehicles taking up space and you're paying in some cases to have 20 years things parked in a place where you're paying for rent and you can't even get rid of it because of the bureaucracy. That has been eliminated.
And therefore the regulations and the guidelines.
That's right. Deals
with it. Not necessarily the office, but the office provides the guidelines.
Correct. And we have an audit function. There is a reporting requirement. So you report things like disposal, who you dispose of, how much you dispose of it. You also have to publish it if it's over 100,000. So there is a lot of transparency. Another transparent issue, previously you never used to hear about contracts awarded. Now the public bodies on a quarterly basis have to report to the office all contracts and tenders awarded, to whom it was awarded, the price that it was awarded for, any variation orders and any litigation matters. So the members of the public now will be aware of all contracts being awarded across every public body, except it is a matter of national security.
Mr. Larchan, there's so much to speak about, but unfortunately we have to end here, and maybe we can get you back for part two to continue this discussion. So we want to thank you so much for gracing us and providing this knowledge, and because a lot of persons are unaware as to the extensive wide range of development with this act, and of course your body. So we want to thank you so much, sir.
Ronald, thank you very much for having me this morning. And we, as I always close, we're looking forward to the cooperation of every citizen in this country to make this a reality, to leave a legacy for the rest of the generation coming after you and I.
Indeed. Thank you so much. So, guys, you have been watching Strictly Legal. My guest, Mr. Munida Larchan, Chairman and Procurement Regulator of the Office of Procurement Regulations. Thank you so much to the Office of Procurement Regulations for providing this, Mr. Larchan, to be here. So, once again, see you next week. You have been watching Strictly Legal, WESN. See you on then. Good day.